Well, hello everybody, and welcome to you from, well, we're just on the cusp of real winter here in Finland, and it gets dark early, and it gets light late, but we're moving along, and I want to just say that I have included here in the chat box a couple of the links. The next link is for here GMT tomorrow morning. It's going to be at 6 a.m. tomorrow morning, GMT, and it will be the Science of Triangles. I know in the United States, perhaps, quite a few of you will be traveling, I guess. And then I also included the Friday evening, a treatise on cosmic fire in depth. I always laugh when I think about those words, in depth. The book is very, very deep, and we'll do our best, but maybe the Tibetan is the only one who can really present such a scholarly work in depth, but at least it represents our attempt to go as deeply as possible. And we'll continue on the evening schedule tomorrow with the normal triangle broadcast, and also the reappearance of the Christ broadcast on Thursday. It will be the evening schedule. Meanwhile, Tuya and I are getting ready well in advance. Hopefully it all works out for the people that will be coming here to join us for the Festival of the New Group of World Servers, once every 7 years, and I hope and trust that you have received this kind of electronic brochure, and it gives you a little idea of the kind of thing that we're hoping to do during that week as kind of a fortification of the New Group of World Servers and of ourselves as potential members. Remember that to be a true member of the New Group of World Servers, and not simply a man or woman of goodwill, really means that we have taken the second initiation, because the New Group of World Servers are meant to look out for those who are taking the first or second initiation and to guide them properly. And some of the, of course, highest members of the of that serving group are already high initiates. So it's a special time of year coming up once every 7 years. I don't know where the last 7 years went. We had, I thought, a very successful 2012 work here in the Temple of Silence, and we're going to do it again, and we'll be broadcasting to you and also linking with you via the webinars. Okay, I'd just like to welcome you among the brave. I always think that with the subject we're on, it requires a certain degree of courage to enter it, because you never know what you're going to find. And in a way, for every human being, the path is not really charted. It's up to your own antikarana and the way you go about re-entering those higher dimensions from which you descended. The question is often asked whether we ascend the emanative stream in the same way that we descended, and there seems to be indication that we should, but at least we get back on track at some point. Mistakes can be made, however, and just the way our great planetary logos made apparently a monumental mistake on the moon chain, so it is that the Buddha did so as well, out of ongoing compassion for the state of humanity. He didn't really take the path that he should have. And so interesting with second-ray types, although he did have a lot of third-ray monadically, they sometimes hang on a bit too long, and they don't give people the chance to stand up for themselves. I've sometimes said, you know, that there are two monadic rays, one that governs the monad as it expresses on the monadic plane, of which, and therefore there can be seven of those types, which are really subtypes, as far as I'm concerned, at my present level of ignorance, subtypes of the three major Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. And I have a feeling that a lot of our great teachers, whatever their monadic ray may be on the monadic plane, find themselves in that indigo triangle, as it is depicted here, within the sea of fire. That is, they find themselves as being part of the Son, Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. That is my guess, although it seems to me that Master Hilarion belongs in the red triangle, pretty much. And I'm not sure about Master R, whether he belongs in the green triangle. But all those things will be revealed to us when they can be of real value. Meanwhile, we're learning as we go, and there is ever so much to learn, and humanity is passing through a great crisis of morality, we might say. You know, what is the proper behavior? What is the value of truth? Who are we looking out for, really? Are we looking out for our tiny little ego and trying to make sure that our personality suffers as little as possible? Or do we really care about the larger picture? I do think that the next 5 years or so, a little bit more, are going to tell a big story about a decision that humanity has inwardly made. Now, sometimes you look out at people and you realize that according to their evolution, they pretty well can't help what they want. It goes with that level of evolution. And to encourage them to follow the what esotericism reveals is a fruitless task. But, of course, the same must be said of us in a different way. We are becoming esoterically alive, and we know something of the higher values. And so on the inner planes, and the outer, of course, as well, we have to come together, stand with massed intent, as it is said, stand with massed intent, and work towards the establishment of the higher values within humanity. And I think we have, I think the next 5.5 years are very important with that regard, in that regard. Now, if, you know, we're reaching only a month away from our gathering here in the Temple of Silence. Right now it looks like the Temple of Reconstruction. The forces of reconstruction are at work. But if you have a notion to come and be with us, we'll do our very best in our humble circumstances to make sure that you have a worthwhile, spiritually revelatory occasion. If we'll do our best. You know, you can never be sure with anybody. And different phases of astrology are working out in different people's lives and ray cycles and so forth. Everybody will have a different kind of experience, but through meditation, deep study, and ceremony, we will do our best to bring home the significance of this festival, and do our very best to strengthen the hands of the new group of world servers. Well, as some of you may notice, I'm pretty much on my own here. My always loyal backups had things that they couldn't avoid doing. So, you know, I hope I'm coming through to you. Wait a second, I can put Tuya over there, and she can be a loyal backup. You know, at least I think I've avoided the worst excess of beginning with a pantomime without my microphone on. And as you know, what we all do is we convert these programs, stripping out the proprietary software of GoToMeeting, and then thereby making it possible to play on any computer, and maybe if your phone is set up for it that way too. So I'd like to welcome those of you who have gathered. And I'm happy you're here. We have, for the moment, a nice shambolic number, 2 and 4 together, which are kind of interesting, which I think are the two monadic rays of our particular solar logos, with probably the 4, the yellow of the 4, being more accented. You never know what color a star will be, but it certainly has something to do with the major rays, and you can find stars on all of the major colors of the spectrum, and some on the minor colors that are less advanced. So I just want to say hello and welcome to Anna and Anne and Annette and Asha, Brennan, Catherine and Damien, and Diana, and Heike, and Helene, Joan and Johi Lee, and Leah. Nice to see you, Leah, here. Margot, and 2 Marthas, Martha Gallagher and Martha Mickelson, and Mary Bell, and Myrna, and Nessa. And Risto, right here in Finland, and Roz and Stephen. I guess we're spread all over the world here, pretty much. Tia and Anne Veronica. And then, of course, Tuya is accompanying me over on the other side. But so far it seems, you know, I hope it's going, that you can hear. And even though I don't have the usual group on the right-hand side, I trust that we'll be okay. Well, what are we doing really here? We're trying to establish a certain type of perception, which we call, or I'm calling them at least, infuception, and which is the a formless type of perception. It's very real. It has everything to do not only with perceiving what being is, but realizing that one is the being one perceives. It's so simple in a way that it's difficult, as is often the case. It's not only a perception, but because it's a perception, it's an ontological fact. You know, ontology is that branch of philosophy which has to do with the study of being. If you can perceive it, then it's real, or at least it's actual. And up far above, as you can only use human words, you know, far above and beyond the universe, any universe, as there are endless numbers of them, just, you know, take that in, is what you really are. Now, we're so used to identifying with a partial self. And it's just a reflex. You know, we've emanated down to this point where our vehicle of expression is what we call the human vehicle, and we pretty well have our eyes and our consciousness fixated on this human vehicle. And while it is a very necessary vehicle in the world of illusion, which is, from my perspective, I define illusion in a very big way. Anything that is part of a universe, including a universe itself, is an illusion, compared with absoluteness. So we're just used to fixating upon all of these cyclic actualities. I don't even want to call them realities. I mean, when we can really see something and hold it and grasp it, we say, hey, well, that's real, you know, because it's related, excuse me, to the word res, res, which means thing. You know, so it seems concrete, it seems real. But it's hard for us to imagine that the most real things are the least tangible things, and that all of these solid, apparently solid, things that we observe around ourselves are simply actualities within a world of illusion. Now, I don't know how far I can go. Maybe I can say, what are we? Well, you know, it's almost meaningless, but, you know, we have to just say there's just no other being or beingness than absoluteness. And that pretty well wipes out all the distinctions that apparently are real to us at the moment. We go farther and farther, and we discover that what we really are is something that can't be defined. Notice how the word F-I-N is in there, which means end, and you'll find it in the word infinite. You'll also find it in the word finite, which is even more of its nature. That which is finite has a boundary, has an end. Well, just what if what we really are has no boundary, has no end, and is, like I like to say, the only no thing in town, the only no thing, the only zero, the boundless zero. You know, and all these things require a lot of pondering. A lot of us have problems with this and that, and we work on those problems to be a better person than we should, because in the realm of, in this realm of lower illusion, we have to constantly improve our presentation, our self-presentation, until it begins to match up with what's supposed to be the universal archetype, or at least the archetype for each one of us as a monad. And we'll discover eventually that that's part of a universal archetype. So we certainly have to improve ourselves in every way possible, and every improvement is really a victory for the universal archetype. And, it means that we come that much closer to completing the purpose of any particular universe. And, you know, like I say, in terms of Earth years, it takes a long, long time. I don't know if there's been any speculation. I've tried to do some really loose, crazy speculation. When it comes to modern science, they sometimes say, well, we've got a universe that's basically going to last 15 billion years. Well, I think we all recognize that that cannot possibly take in all of the subtle 10 dimensions. It cannot. And that is a very small number. As huge as that number may be, when you compare our normal lifespan and our Earth years and all that kind of thing, it's a small number. You know, the real duration of a universe, or actual duration, in this world of relativity, is just going to have a lot more zeros after it than the 9 zeros of a myriad or a billion, you know. So we're dealing with big figures, and we're dealing with our own eternal nature, which it seems we always have to rediscover. Like I've often said, that the absolutely infinite has to demonstrate as finite if it is going to be really absolutely infinite. It's got to include that possibility as well. The one thing, and I'm working on it, you know, and maybe many are, that it cannot do is contradict itself to the point of annihilation. In other words, that's not the negation which the great philosopher Spinoza would not allow, would mean the contradiction of God, meaning that you posit that God exists or the absolute deity exists, and then you also say, well, maybe God doesn't exist. So that would be negation, a denial of the presence of the greatest of all distinct beings. When I say distinct, I mean something just a tiny bit less than absoluteness. So there are people that argue either way on that, and they say basically absolute reality is self-canceling and there's nothing there. But like I say, nothing does not exist. The no thing exists. And by the no thing, I mean that out of which all perceptions arise. So, you know, you can tell we're taking a little bit of a different tack here, a different approach. Is it a necessary approach? Well, some seem to be interested in it. I told you my story. I kind of get choked up every time I think of it, you know. How I deviated from Ray 4 one day and found myself in Ray 2. And it was early Capricorn of the year 1963. And I found myself in another world due to leaving the fourth ray behind, which I never entirely do, but okay. I've left it behind at various times and said something else is more important. And I went with that something else, which was all about the big picture. When I met my teacher, who in this case was not Master DK, but, you know, later, of course, Master DK, once I recognized what was really going on, I recognized myself as very somehow related to him over many years and in different ways. But maybe everybody has to make that kind of leap in their own way and say, look, I don't care if it looks crazy to other people, if it's practical or not, if it's if it looks like nonsense to other people, I don't care. Because you have to run counter to the opinion of the best and the wisest in the worldly sense. So, you know, in a treatise on white magic, it tells you about that. You have to inquire the way, obey the inner impulses of the soul, and constantly run up against the opinion of the best and the wisest in a worldly sense. You cannot accept worldly opinion and get anywhere in this subtle field. And then, of course, the fourth point, set an example. Maybe the hardest point of all. Because we all, you know, get off the path, and it's just a question of when we realize it and get back on the path. So, all right. Little preamble. I've got some questions that I kind of have wanted to ask you. And I have one that kind of begins. This is one of those cosmic questions, and I'm not going to spend too long on it because what I think is that the human mind, as presently constituted, has a tough time answering this question. It's all a question of, you know, what we understand, really. What we think is creditable, real in the normal sense of being real, not in the absolute sense of being real. It just depends on our worldview. And we have to carry that worldview with us as a substratum of everything we do in life. And that's where it's hard, because sometimes your worldview is very lofty, and the things that you end up doing in life seem to contradict it and are very humble, and you don't do so well in living out your true worldview, but we will get better and better at that, thank goodness. So I'm just going to ask a question. And, you know, if what I've said is that there is a God, and this God is greater than any universe, which this God does become. Remember, I tried to distinguish between creating a universe and becoming a universe. Well, it may seem a small distinction, but it's really huge. Because what it leads to is a, what Blavatsky would say, a philosophical pantheism. The Germans of the 19th century were very fond of that. They kind of inherited that from India in a way, with whom they have a very strong ray and astrological affinity. So for the universe to be created by God, you can get that split. Here's God, and here's what God created, never mind out of what. There was nothing else around except God itself. So you can't say that right from the very beginning there was matter and then there was God, because that rather leaves out an omnipotent, all-inclusive deity. So I don't think that flies. You know, when you say God created, that's one thing. And when you say God became, then you have to, something clicks, and you realize that everything around you is divine, is God itself. God in limitation, because, you know, real God has no limitation, but in a universe, it's God in limitation to time and space. There's a boundary to how God appears, this absolute deity, and there is a time sequence, a boundedness in time, when God appears as a finite something. But the real God, of course, is absolutely infinite, and that's maybe what this question is all about. And if it seems a little abstract, well, it is, and then I'll get into something that is a little less abstract and has more to do with how we can see things. Remember, what you're trying to do in a process such as being offered here, you're really trying to change your perception of reality. It's a very big thing. You're trying to change your perception of reality. You're trying to step outside the normal human method of perceiving. And maybe step into the way the members of the fifth kingdom of nature perceive. That's called the kingdom of souls. And then when you go on to the sixth and seventh, you know, the kingdom of planetary lives, and then the kingdom of solar lives, and that's not the end. We're just not given any other kingdoms, you know. It just keeps going, and the depth of your realization and the depth of your perception keeps on changing towards more and more accuracy of what's really happening. Now, if you're up for that particular adventure, and you kind of know that there's no one that can draw a map for you, that you're going to have to find it yourself, well, then these types of thoughts and these exercises and so forth are the thing for you. And that won't stop you from learning a lot about occultism and the ageless wisdom. You can still become very learned. DK is said to be the most learned of our local crop of masters. And you can still find yourself everywhere. That's omnipresence. And eventually comes what we might call omnipotence within a particular sphere. Now, you know, when we talk about being omnipotent, we're not talking about that just yet. Throughout the whole universe, we're defining a sphere. And we're saying that within that sphere, omnipotence can be registered with regard to the nature of and constitution of that sphere. So omnipotence, in other words, what we consider to be the all keeps on growing until it reaches the end of the universal all. And then we're ready for the great pralaya, and we've been through, well, you know, you can't count. If you give a definite number, it's just wrong. It's always more than you can ever specify. Now, that's a really different view of what we are and what the human being is, never letting us off the hook to live within our limitation, okay? I just don't want anybody to go away thinking that I'm saying you are excused from the exercises necessitated by limitation. Nobody is excused. And at the same time, we awaken to something else. So here's my question. Do we understand that the absolute deity, you know, the super, let me give another name for it to make it a little easier to understand, the supra universal deity, which, remember, is, to my way of thinking, not yet the absolute, that this absolute deity, this super universal deity, is absolutely, infinitely articulable. Now, that word articulation, I've explained to you from the musical perspective, it means the notes are separated. So division exists, whereas within the absolute itself, the final state, which is forever exactly what it is and nothing else, there's no division. So when you mention a word like articulation, you get division and you get relativity. So do we understand that the absolute deity is absolutely infinitely articulable, and that we too are that absolute infinitude? Now, let's just pause just for a moment to take in this, preposterous thought. That we too are this deity, and that because of it, we, in essence, and I better add that, that we too are absolutely infinite. We are that absolute infinitude in essence. Now, you know, if you tell people what you might be studying here, it sounds like absolute nonsense. But of course, it is nonsense in that sense, you know, it's not all about the lower senses. Just imagine for a moment that beyond the appearance of that self-perception, that finite self-perception we call a universe, we are something else altogether. Because you just cannot achieve any actual infinitude within a universe. It's bounded. It's bounded by space. It's bounded by time. There's just no way to lay down an absolute infinitude or any kind of real, you know, actual infinitude in a universe. But let the universe disappear, which it does, we're told, at every pralaya, every big pralaya, then it's a whole new world. Supra-universal actuality, or, you know, sort of in that transition place between reality and actuality. Now, the mind is not used to think this way. And it's really hard to be serious, as if you're thinking serious thoughts, and to say to yourself in a believable manner, I am absolute infinity. Not just I alone, of course, you know, not just little I, but it's like saying that every finite thing, every finitude, is actually infinite. And that's actually true. Now, you know, you have to stay with that for a while before maybe your heart center starts to vibrate in a certain way, before the heart and the head vibrates in a certain way, and maybe the entire head center that is unfolded as much as it's unfolded in any one of our cases. And finally, you know, if you keep going up, it will be the awareness of the monad which reveals somehow the truth of this otherwise crazy statement, I am absolute infinitude, with all of its articulations. Now, you know, in other words, it's kind of interesting that ignorance itself in universe gives us a species of free will. Maybe the only freedom, really, is of the deity itself. Nobody's telling the deity, the supra universal deity, what kind of universe it has to be next. So, you know, it's like a completely free choice. Out of infinite, absolutely infinite possibilities, except the only demand is that whatever is brought forward along the ray of the absolute has to take place within the boundary of finitude. The essence is always infinite, but the relativity is always finite. So what I'm saying, and you know, it may be, we've got to start thinking of ourselves in a different way. Which I said doesn't mean that we avoid the limited little I. We take care of that. But when we're really going deeply and we're looking for the truth of our nature, we've got to stay with it. I don't know how long it takes. Maybe it just comes on you in an instant. And maybe it's going to take days. Maybe take in any one day. Maybe it'll take hours. I don't know. Everybody's different that way. But you know what this is saying, of course, in a way, there is nothing missing in you except negativity. And negativity is, which is, let me use that word again, ontological denial. You know, it'd be like saying, well, there is a God and there isn't a God at the same time. And some people actually, you know, they kind of get into that and they get into a state of like nothingness. But the nothingness is really no thingness, no boundedness, no specific bounded, outlined things, states within the great it. The great it is absoluteness. Now look, maybe you want to deal with language like this, maybe you don't, but at the end of it all lies a possibility. Oh yeah, you know, if we're proud of what we're doing in the world, and you know, we say, oh, look at all I've done. And look how I'm succeeding. And this is really success or whatever, or this is really failure. Those things are negated. They don't loom so large in the individual who can begin to do this. You know, look at my successes. They're just next to nothing compared with the possibilities which are semi-real. I don't know what else to call them. They're between utter reality and actuality. Compared to the state of absolute infinity, which I'm saying that every one of us is, all those successes in the world, or even failures, they really begin to shrink. Now, it doesn't mean, I'll always say, it doesn't mean that you're excused from improving your relative state. You have to improve your relative state. That's the rules, you know. But at the same time, every once in a while, you take a vacation from the normal state of mind. And you realize that somehow behind it all is this absolute infinity. You know, it's all in you, everything. Every possibility except the possibility that there are no possibilities. You know, I mean, you know, the cat is chasing its own tail here, but I think you understand what I'm saying. I'm not going to negate absoluteness. And I'm not going to negate absolute infinitude. And the big step is to realize that, you know, what if you are that, really? Or semi-really, you know, in between. What if you are that? Let's pause just for a moment and go into that a little bit. Well, if you believe you can be that, you know, the old Vedantic thing, thou art that, it pretty much means the absoluteness. But I'm one step lower in a way. I'm accepting very much the normal thou art that of Vedanta and Brahmanism and all that. I'm accepting that immediately. But I'm now looking at this absolute infinity, which, you know, all, you can just begin to think in that direction. You can't really expose it. But I'm saying, yeah, that's what I am, and I have to think and think and think and meditate and stay with it before I realize that it's true. There's not one thing happening, and even not happening. Because remember that in a universe, the absolute God has to make a choice. Can't shove all of absolute infinitude into a little universe, relatively. You cannot do anything but take the essence of reality and make sure that the essence of a universal logos abides. You know, the essence is there, but not all the numbers. Remember what Blavatsky said, there's the realm of no number, and there's the realm of number. Now, every once in a while, we take a little trip into no number, which is so utterly strange, because we're used to dealing with number. Our minds are set up, because we're limited beings, to deal with number. And there's just a little more here. I wrote in a different color of ink. The absolute deity, too, is inconceivable by man. I mean, you're never going to, you know, here in the universe, in this finite condition, and, you know, we're really pretty finite compared to some of these higher beings, and they are finite, too. There's only so far we can go. We can just get a little bit of a little hint about it. And if I, you know, anything that happens, pantheism, this is God in action. Pantheism. Everywhere. Deity. And actually, finally, of course, there is no where. Because you need to have a where. You need a division. Because where always has to be relative to something else. And when there's only one thing, there's nowhere. Nowhere. There's nowhere. And other things there are not either. So, you know, it's inconceivable, but you can only imagine Galileo shaking his head when he had one of those realizations. You know, a great fifth ray type, and who knows what else, and basically saying, God cannot be understood. You know, and that's a pretty high human being saying that. But if we get the slightest little impression about what the God of the universe is, and the God beyond the universe, and that which is beyond any God, then maybe our lives will be very enriched. So, you know, obviously I should stop thinking right here, because it's inconceivable, but I offered a few hypotheses, and basically I said that only that which contradicts the infinite potential of absolute infinity is not actual. I'm going to put in or semi-real for the in-between state with it. Or maybe I should have said within it. All possibility except that of self-negation exists within a super universal actuality which I am calling the semi-real. In other words, the utterly real is absoluteness. The actual, which is illusory and not really real, is whatever happens in a universe and a universe itself. And in between is this absolute infinitudinous articulated state, which I'm saying is semi-real. And here's maybe the last thing I'm saying on this. One can negate the possibility of any formal in-universe actuality. Maybe not, we're filled with all kinds of events and movements, and all of those might be or they might not be. And it's a kind of negation, but one cannot ever negate the essence, and I'm going to make it big essence, the essence or the supranumeron of that universal actuality. So whatever, let me, you know, try to make it as simple as possible. Whatever is occurring in the universe, it has an above the universe noumenon. You know, there's phenomena, that's what happens, and there's noumena, the cause of it. So there are these noumena in the supra universal world that cause all of these actualities, and those noumena in absolute infinitude, they exist forever. You cannot change absolute infinitude. All you can do is finitize it, not really, but finitize it in illusion. So let me, you know, sometimes something comes to me, you cannot change absolute infinitude, but you can finitize it in universal illusion. So what is all this saying before you just throw up your hands and say, oh my God, you know, what are we talking about here? We're saying we live in an unreal world. It's not real. It's relative. It's actual. It's a finite kind of reflection of a portion of absolute infinitude that God above the universe has gathered and shoved out there into isolation. I'm just using crude words. Shoved out there into isolation, into limitedness, into finiteness, into boundedness, because that's what God has to do. So anyway, what's the practical part? All this is unreal, but it goes on forever. When the Shankaracharya, one of my favorite authors, he says something about Maya. So, you know, the universe is Maya. Most mysterious is Maya, he says, and without end. And he might as well have said without beginning. This goes on cyclically forever for reasons that we'll just have to become more acquainted with as we go along and expand our ability to understand. All this is unreal, but we have to tend to it because it's our becoming. It's our emergence into finiteness. It's us. And we are involved in a creative act, a dance, a play, a drama, a symphony, you know, all these artistic terms I want to use. You know, DK tells us the morning cloud, the morning stars sang together. It was so beautiful, you know, I don't know if I find it immediately, but he has a conclusion to Cosmic Fire, and I don't know if I find it, but it's from the old commentary. The morning stars sang in their courses. the great paean of creation echoeth yet and arouseth the vibration. There comes cessation of the song when perfection is achieved. When all are blended into one full chord, you know how it is that great symphonies often end with a bow, you know, the final chord. When all are blended into one full chord, the work is done. Dissonance in space soundeth yet. Discord arises in many systems. When all is resolved into harmony, when all is blended into symphony, the grand chorale will reverberate to the utmost bounds of the known universe. Then will occur that which is beyond the comprehension of the highest Chohan, the marriage song of the heavenly man. What a way to end a book. And if we, you know, study hard and meditate hard and work this out in service somehow, then will come for us some realization of the grandeur of what the old commentary is hinting at. It's really overwhelming, at least it overwhelms me. Now that's what it's all, you know, that's the finale. It's called finale, and in any symphony, usually there are four movements, and the last movement is the finale, which somehow embodies all that the symphony was meant to do. And this chord that reverberates to the utter bounds of the known universe, of course he says the known universe, you have to ask why, it will somehow embody the purpose behind everything. Okay. So, you know, I just want to, you know, now we're heading into the season, the Christmas season, and Tui and I have huge work here because of all that's coming our way. And before long, we're not going to be able to continue during this time. So there'll be a few weeks here where the Ask program and all of these additional programs will not be continued. And why would that be? Because we're going to be broadcasting other kinds of programs, which have to do with the new group of world servers, and we'll let you know about that, huh? We'll let you know about that. And I don't know how long we'll go on. We still have to discuss it, but probably there'll be two or three weeks in there somehow that just we've got to do other things and then resume again in Capricorn. Okay, friends, I appreciate your presence. And if anybody has any questions, you can write them down or statements in your question box. You know, there's a little question thing there. And also, if you want to talk, just raise your hand. And we'll go on, you know, take a little time to look at this tremendous change of identity, which can be detected. I mean, it's just, you know, perfect. That's perfect. Perfect forever. And the old meaning of perfect means that everything is included. It's complete. How can there be a completed infinitude? Well, that's got to be one of the big mysteries. So, if there's anybody that wants to offer a thought, offer a question, or perhaps say something, this would be the time to do it. Usually Joe is helping me find things. But I see Damien there, and you're self-muted, Damien, so as soon as you get out of that self-mute, there you go.
You're Hi, on. Michael. Very interesting talk. Yeah, I don't have a problem what you're saying. I mean, well, when I say a problem, I grasp it and it kind of sits right with me. But here's the thing. I mean, I've been pondering about this quite a lot. And so I find myself in what I describe as empty space, just nothingness. But here's the question. Here's what hinges on me. Isness, right? Beyond everything. My question is, and that's probably it's a very unfair question, and I ask myself this all the time. The question is, why? What's the point?
There is no point.
But do you see where I'm coming from? From my limited perspective, right? I have, you know, and even reading about, you know, Maya, the illusion, I get that. The universe being an illusion, I get that. But at the very end, I say to myself, well, why? You know, what's the point? You know,
that's a big question, you know, and
yeah, maybe, you know, as I say, I commend you for actually, even when I started to a couple of weeks ago when you started this, I said to myself, well, I was wondering when someone would even attempt to actually get into that, you know, because I've thought about that myself, not to the depth that you would have gone into it. I have touched on it, but it always comes back to one question with me, and it keeps nagging and nagging and nagging, and it always comes into my head, just why? And it's strange, occasionally when I say that to myself, I find myself in empty space, what I would call. There's just nothing.
Well, there's, yeah.
No, I'm talking about what I've experienced. Maybe I'm expressing it wrong, but that's what actually happened.
Okay.
It's like I'm going into a form. I'm not meditating. Well, I'm pondering and I am meditating, but that wouldn't be the way I'd meditate as a rule, if you know what I mean. I'd be either doing the triangle meditation or other things. But I'd find myself there just, it's like my consciousness is in empty space. It's very difficult to put into words.
If it's really space and it's empty, if it's really empty, I guess we're getting into the Buddhist void. It is no thing.
Something it's something that I'm not comfortable with it, mm-hmm. but I don't judge it. But while I'm there, like I say, and I think I've considered why I feel uncomfortable. And the thing I come up with is because I don't understand.
Right.
You know?
How can we? But here's the thing, you know, I've had people really become angry with me and even sort of quit, you know, everything when I said, look, you do not evolve forever. You're already existing supra-universally in a state of completeness, unalterable completeness. Now, about points, okay? First of all, I always joke, you know, that absoluteness is pointless because a point becomes a perception. You know, a point is a perception.
Yeah.
But what I just get the continuation of absolute bliss, which we are, and, you know, which words fail, the continuation of utterness by venturing into what is apparently non-utterness. You know, obviously, nothing, we're not going to improve, Damien, in any absolute sense. There's no improvement, only relatively.
That's
the place of improvement. But so therefore, the rest has to just be, I don't know if I can find a word for it, but the continuation in illusion of a non-illusory utterness. And begin to get the feeling of it, you know, look, we're told there's happiness, joy, and bliss, right? So maybe it's a little tough even to experience joy some days. And happiness is of the personality. And as far as bliss goes, there's a lot of people that are blissed out, but it's a little phony. It's not a real thing. So I can only think of the what is required to continue the absolute intensity of bliss. All of this, and also the sort of intrigue of being finite while being absolutely infinite at the same time. And that seems like a crazy thing to say, but the rediscovery of our true nature, it's a bit like hide and go seek, you know, it's hidden and then there it is, you see.
Yeah.
So there's some kind of law. Now, I don't know what to make of law, because law is usually a factor of divine will. And maybe when it comes to what you call this absolute deity, it is the divine will of the deity. But you cannot even talk about will or any of the other divine things inside absoluteness, because its utterness takes over all of them.
I get that. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I get that. I got that the first time you were speaking.
Well, I'll tell you what. You're pretty close then. You're pretty close.
But I don't know. The first webinar that you gave, I got that. And as it got, as you went on, right, it kept confirming what you were saying. So I said, yeah, I picked up. Now, whether I buy into the isness and what you're saying is hinges on one thing for me. I don't know. Kate's coming back to me. Question is why?
Well,
it just keeps nagging at me, you know. And I do ponder, you know. And I just thought I'd ring up and say
it's okay. It's okay, because you're returning to the question, which all serious thinking people will eventually be asking. We can't put why in usual terms. There's a goal. There's a goal. There's no goal here. There is the experience of ourselves in a state of finitude, which is a necessity. There's no goal because, look, if I tell you or me or whatever that we're already perfect forever, people would just say, oh, come on. This is nonsense. But when you look at the essence of things, it turns out that, in fact, strip away all the mistaken identifications, and we
totally
are...
Totally agree with you. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, then maybe...
I agree with you. I don't know. I know I'm probably going to wreck your head here, Michael, but that question keeps coming back and back and back and back and back.
Maybe we
and
have
I
to.
only
yeah.
And the only thing I come up with for myself is because of my limited understanding and my limited perspective. And I keep saying to myself, well, maybe if I expand further my consciousness, I'm going to get it.
Well, that's a reasonable hypothesis. Obviously, even though, I've said that the absolute, I've said that the God of this universe, inside the universe, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
is just an infinitesimal and cannot get it, but they can sure get a lot more than we can. And all I can say is that as we get closer, and maybe as the universe disappears, we will enter what I might call the self-justifying state, where that particular question of how to define the word why will change. When you look at why, we look at cause, we look at effect, we look at goal. It's not about that. There may be a goal for a universe like, let's do the archetype right and have this thrill of being the design properly executed. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Well, all I can say, what is, Damien, I ask myself and you, what is absolutely infinite bliss? Not just bliss as a human being can experience it, but the uttermost bliss that can occur that wipes out every other state by including it.
Well, it said that our planetary locus is in a state of bliss through pain.
Well, I think he's got a few problems, a particular planetary logos.
Yeah.
But I said, like,
he's a rebel with a cause.
Yeah, he's a rebel. Yeah, and maybe with a cause. But absolutely.
Oh, without a cause.
Well, we'll find out. We'll find out how that goes. But, when I start to think about these ultimate states that are just words in a way to a human being, absolutely infinite, utter bliss, beyond which nothing can be experienced. And whatever it does or is done in its name or seems to be happening, it's all in the cause of this absolute, infinite, utter bliss. That's all I can get, That's all I can get for the moment, because I know I'm perfect already forever. And when I say I don't mean this.
Relatively,
look, I'm willing to dot my I's and cross my T's, okay? I'm willing to take pains to improve whatever little limitation I appear to be. I'm willing to do that. But if I go a little further, or maybe a lot further, there's something looming. And it seems to be the why of the whole thing. Just to continue.
It's just like, for me, it's something really, really far but near. I know it's there and I can't reach it.
Well, that's maybe because you are it. You see what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's to do with your consciousness and changing the way you think. And I'm with
all
you.
That. The seeker and the thought are one. The seeker and the thought are one. And St. Francis, what we're looking for is what's doing the looking.
Yeah.
Okay, so there we go. There we go.
Okay.
Okay, I'll do my best, but it's up to everybody to, this is the enigma, and this is what we have to solve. Somehow, some people said, they played with the word solved, and they changed it into so loved, God so loved the world, as if the love was a great key, offering a solution. And I think on some level, that's got to be it. I mean, I think you could absolutely, if you ever got hit by divine love, you would couldn't stand it, you know. I mean, you really couldn't stand it. It would just be more than the form could take. So that's one thing. But there are...
I was just going to say, just something popped into my head when you were talking about that. A couple of years ago, I went on a Vipassana 10-day meditation course. You know Vipassana from the Buddhist meditation?
Yes, yes.
And what they were teaching was preserved in Burma for 500 years. But as I was going through, it was held in noble silence for 10 days. And I was out wandering around in the grounds one day. And I was just meditating. And I had this flash. It wasn't even for a fraction of a second. And it nearly floored me. And then I heard a voice said, that's what it means to concentrate. Focus, concentration.
Oh, yeah. Well, look, revelation.
Now, when I say it wasn't even for a split second, I mean, if it was for a second, I probably wouldn't be talking to you here now. I'd be dead. But it's like I was shown something. Yeah, it was like I've just been shown something for focus, for meditate, for when you're concentrating, and how powerful that one thing can be.
Exactly.
And it just relates back to what you were saying about if you got the experience of pure love.
Oh, just take your part and put it together again, you know?
Yeah.
Well, look, you know, even in this tiny little point of a universe, such experiences await us as we have long forgotten in every other. So maybe, you know, we have to enjoy the journey and always be surprised, at what we really are and what we've left behind and what we've descended from. I just feel sure that it's not for nothing, it's for nothing. It's not for nothing that all this is going on. And
that's another thing you have to think about.
I distinguish between the nothing and the nothing. Well, thanks for articulating that, Damien. I appreciate that.
Okay. Thanks, Michael.
You bet. Okay, well, I'm looking for you. If anybody, I know, it's so, what's the word that's always used when we're dealing with DK's material? Abstruse. You know what I mean? Ab is right away, it's a word of abstraction. It means to pull away in such a way that what you're looking at looks very foreign and you see it from an entirely different perspective. It's very abstruse. But look, what a human being has done, a human being can do. So we're all on a path, and when we are a confirmed monad and dwelling within the vehicle of the monad, just the way we right now dwell within the personality, we're going to see a lot more, and we're going to understand what abstraction is, and that's just the beginning. That's just the beginning of things in this universe, and it's been going on forever in varieties that we can not yet fathom, and maybe we cannot fathom them until in the great Mahapralaya, we leave this particular universe behind. And is there such a thing as infinite memory? I don't know. But we can look back and it's all included in what we are. The absolute infinitude. And more and less. We are both we are both more and less than the absolute infinitude. Well, how can I talk about there being more than the absolute infinitude? And I just say, absoluteness is that less that is more. Absoluteness is that less that is more. So, you know, you'll be really glad to get back to DK's books, where things are very specific and wonderful and all that. You won't have to be searching for new languages and all that. But still, for the brave, for the courageous, for those who can stand to enter into it, okay, here it is. One version of it, anyway. Okay. Sometimes things get said, and there's not too much more to say after those things are said. And because, you know, talking and thinking in words and sounds, it's a big limitation. You know how often Master DK complains about having to put things into words, especially in that so-called, this is the way they say it together, inelastic tongue, the English language. It's not, it's rigid, it's a rigid language, inelastic tongue, the English language. But you got to work with what you got. And if you have your mind and you have your language, or maybe you're the teaching has been translated into different languages, then you got to work with that. And then if something else turns up, which it will, then you work with that. And you keep on going until, if you were to walk into the library in Shambhala, the books or whatever it is, means of communication, displayed or written there would mean something to you, just the way they do presently to Master DK. Okay, I hope you're not discouraged. Leave that to me. I'll be the one who gets, you know, discouraged. I do get discouraged at times, but then I know my sense of timing is off, and I've lost the apprehension of eternity. If I ever get discouraged, it will mean that I've forgotten temporarily eternal duration. I've given my wife a big hint here. She can say, Michael, you appear to have forgotten eternal duration. So I hope I can live up to some of the higher realizations that come and not just relegate them to the realm of words. Look, I'm not going to push anymore here. I think it's enough. Next time we're going to be dealing with something more practical. Well, I don't know how I say it, more practical. It's about isness. It's about isness. And how isness, what isness is, and how it arises. For me, it's a very evocative word. And I think that when isness begins to mean something to us, that the world does change, our perception, especially of the world, does change. So look, friends, you know, for me not to push it is already a major victory, because I'm a pusher. But I just want to say I'm grateful to you for showing up and maybe thinking along, you know, with what's said and what is thought. And I always like to end these sessions close to home, which means, of course, the great word of power by which we solve the problems in our relative world. We cannot forget that relatively, there's a lot that tends towards what we call evil. There's no such thing as absolute evil. I think Blavatsky tells us that. But there certainly is ignorance. And beyond ignorance, there is something worse. And it's called willful ignorance, where you perpetuate a point of view that you know is limited, but simply because you're too afraid to engage with the point of view which is less limited. So may the powers that be spare us from such a fate. Okay, the great invocation. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Oh. Okay. Well, we wish you a pleasant whatever coming up. We'll be starting in another 8 hours and 20 minutes. The Science of Triangles webinar, which I've given you the link for, and the whole team sends a lot of love and many blessings to everybody. And as long as we can, we just keep offering these webinars and broadcasts to give us a chance together in real time to participate. So love and many blessings to everybody. I'll convert this. I'll send it to BL. We'll put it up on Makara. And you'll be able to recommend it to others if you feel like doing so. Or review anything yourself. We'll all get there, you know. We are there forever. Forever, we are there, and the emanated aspect of ourselves will also get to the place where we are. So allow yourself to think some different thoughts, and you never can tell what might come in of a revelatory nature. See you soon. Bye-bye.